Ambassador Jiang Ziwu.
For a spy who's been betrayed, there are lines to be crossed.
I've been set up.
Rules to break.
Who is this man?
And a reason to fight back. Wesley Snipes.
What goes around, comes around.
The Art of War. Look for it on video cassette and DVD.
Back in the house, and long time no see, Mark, movie geek, rap fan, shaver, back with a vengeance.
How's it going?
I'm groovy, baby. Glad to have you back. And
yeah, glad to be back. It's been a while.
The second Wesley Snipes franchise we're taking on.
All right.
Well, third, I guess, if we count. Because, yeah, we did do an Undisputed special, didn't we?
I'm assuming the first one was Blade, right?
Yes. And we did talk Demolition Man in the comic book that, believe it or not, was actually pretty cool. But, yeah, this is probably technically the third that you could say is a franchise. Well, we'll do Expendables soon, don't get me wrong. But, like, the second franchise he has headed up that, could
Part
have been
four
something.
Is coming out next month already.
Yeah, I can't believe it. Expendables. Wesley was always kind of one of my many just action stars, like the everyday men I've watched with all the Harrison Fords, Antonio Banderas's, and other just 90s and 2000s stars on the big and small screens. You know, I would watch anybody, whether it was Don Johnson, Kiefer Sutherland, to Richard Dean Anderson, to, you know, just all the other guys who were, you know, big shots like Bruce Willis and it seemed a lot, and Pierce Brosnan, and it just seemed like he was just one of those other guys you got. If you didn't want to deal with Seagal behind the scenes and Bruce Willis and Stallone were unavailable, he seemed to just always come up in the hat.
Yeah, I mean, he's one of those action stars. I mean, I would consider him an A-list action star, but
yeah,
I would say
great,
you know,
with comedy and drama.
I would say, like, he doesn't have quite as many. He could have had more, I think, action, kind of action hits under his belt.
Yeah,
more films like Passenger 57 or, you know, stuff like that. But The Art of War was a good one. I mean, that's one I saw in the theater, and
lucky you.
You know, I bought it when it came out on VHS.
Sweet. It was produced Pictures.
Finally, you know, oh gosh, it's probably 5 years ago now. I upgraded to DVD. And I considered buying it on Blu-ray, but finally it was just like I've replaced so many movies.
You can only
I got
so many.
To the point where I'm like, you know, let's just stick with the DVD for now. But I've been meaning to watch it again. I mean, I try to throw an action film on like 4th of July, like if I come home after hopefully seeing fireworks somewhere or whatever. I like to usually end the night by throwing on a good action film.
Just a fun, just over the top movie.
Yeah. But this year, I mean, I had to work really early the next morning, still kind of getting used to working like earlier in the day. So, you know, I thought if there's time, I'm going to throw that one on. But, you know, it's just, especially with having kids and stuff, it's like, it's already midnight. Like I got to get to bed.
Yeah.
But, But sooner or later, I don't think my wife's ever seen that one. So sooner or later, I got to say, hey, let's watch it again.
Yeah, I'd say so. So are you familiar with franchise pictures?
Well, I've heard of franchise pictures. I'm not super familiar with them. So is that the one? It has like a, I could well be wrong. It's like a white logo with like buildings on it.
Yeah, a giant white building. So it, long story short, they were kind of the Canon Films of Warner Brothers. Like they would just produce stuff direct to HBO and under the Warner Brothers. And they had some good ones like Spartan. And then they had some infamous ones like Ballistic X versus Sever. And
oh, yeah. I remember that.
Fear.com and Boondock Saints was a cult hit by them. So they did a few other ones by Fox and company, but then they just kind of faded out. And Andrew Stevens was kind of the egomaniac producer. He had already been an actor starring in sleazy and cheesy movies. And basically no one could tell him no. And they cranked this one out. And, you know, just from like all the electronic music and stylized fight scenes, you're going to get another Matrix type, you know, movie.
Yeah, it had. I mean, I remember it definitely had some flavor of the Matrix thrown in there, even though it was, you know, contemporary set film. But like,
right,
the whole scene at the end and like the well, I think they were at the UN building, right?
Yeah. And
like the gunplay and stuff. I mean, it had like, you could tell they were going for like kind of somewhat similar to the Matrix. Which in turn, you know, obviously owes a lot of debt again to John Woo. So, I mean,
yeah, no. Anything, any early 80s, 90s cinema is pretty much firing on all fours. And B movie director Christian Dubois, who had done stuff like The Assignment, Screamers, and Scanner Films, was helming this, you know, because it was a Canadian production. The cinematographer has Pierre Gill has done a bunch of stuff. Especially TV. Simon Barry, one of the co-writers, has gone on to do other sorts of just giant Canadian TV shows, including Bad Blood and Warrior Nun and the Van Helsing Show and Continuum. But the biggest connection to Wesley Snipes here might be Wayne Beach, who previously wrote Snipes' movie Murder at 1600, the one where he's the Secret Service agent. And then he did another
one a long time ago.
Yeah. And this
I bought it recently, though. That's another one. It's like,
it's another one that divides Snipes fans. I don't know why.
I wish I had more time to watch movies. I mean,
yeah, I do. I did too, man. I could usually sneak in like six a day and it was fun. But
oh, back in the day, yeah, when I was like a kid in the summer vacation, yes, sometimes I would watch like five in a day. But
why not, man? Why not? You only get one life. So, kind of like later Schwarzenegger, where, you know, he would do other movies that people would just compare or even lampoon as being derivative of his earlier, like True Lies and Commando persona. This was kind of another one where they're like, oh, he's in Rising Sun, U.S. Marshals territory again. He's both, you know, it's another East meets West scenario where he's dealing with some Chinese triads.
Yeah.
Oh, you know, not Japan, but there's still a lot of other stuff. Like there's a big North Korean.
I was going to say,
go ahead.
There was almost like a James Bond angle at times, or even like the opening scene reminded me of like a Mission Impossible type scenario. Mm-hmm. Like the team was in like that van, something like that. So
yeah.
He had on the tuxedo and all that.
Mm-hmm. And he's whispering in and he's got kind of a Q kind of gadget man. And of course, we will pretty much just spoil the movie because it's really not because we want to, but like it's pretty easy to connect the dots. But there's a bunch of other like Chinese American actors who you've seen in every other kind of movie, from Wind Talkers to Olympus Has Fallen, and they do their job. Mm-hmm. Yeah, James Hong from Big Trouble in China, the assassinated ambassador, Kerry Tagawa. So there again, there's another Rising Sun connection. Donald Sutherland is another military sneak. This is pretty much when he's just getting typecast in that galore. He's like, got to play a shady government guy. And Ann Archer from Jack Ryan movies and just, you know, various other just dramas. Is pretty much the,
who was the woman who played the female team member of Wesley Snipes' character?
I think that's her. Yeah, Eleanor. Yeah.
Okay.
Or
she was like younger.
Are you talking about the Polish gal?
Let me see here real quick.
Was she the white gal who was with her, or are you talking about the?
She ended up like getting killed. Like, you know, spoiler alert. But again, we're kind of
okay. Yeah. So I have her here as Liliana Kororovsky as Agent Jenna Novak. So I think that's who that was. But she's another gal who's done a lot of Canadian productions, mostly with the same filmmakers. But Fernando Ching was one of the other henchmen. You've seen him in stuff like Fast Five and Warrior and The Accountant. But Maury Chalkin, there's another comedic face. He's doing serious stuff again, but pretty much. Oh, yeah.
Marie Matiko, I forgot she was in it. She was in The Corruptor, yeah. I remember.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. You are. That is the woman that I was thinking of.
No, it's Liliana. All good. It's a good music movie. It's all good. Mary apparently won a AX award. And for those who wonder what the hell that means, it's a airport experience award. So they were like, hey, she's best actress in a feature film at this particular festival. So someone won an award for this B action film. Yeah, she's done little minor stuff. She's done a lot of spoof movies, TV guest spots, and was kind of one of the disco gals and Mystery Men. And she pretty much was another one who kind of just did a lot of obscure stuff once the 2010s began. But she's not really typecast as a dragon lady, but she's just kind of one of those where she appears in stuff like The Corruptor with Chow Yun-Fat and
and that just, one they filmed that in Toronto. I remember that was like,
Toronto, so there you go.
Toronto doubled for New York City in that.
Apparently this was supposed to be a Jet Li movie, and I can't find any info as to why he passed on it, but
now that you mention that, I've totally forgot about that. I think I remember reading that, though.
Like, yeah, in Black Belt magazine? Or
I'm interested to learn more about that. Like, there's certain little pieces of info about Jet Li out there, you know, that, like, he made that Rise to Honor video game.
I love that game, yeah.
Yeah, me too. And there was, like, supposed to be a sequel, but it never happened or whatever. But
this is weird, because I think it did good business. Like, at that point, anyone would buy a video game if it had their favorite Kung Fu star, rapper, or even NBA player in it, you know?
I thought at the time, at least it was probably the best, you know, attempt at recreating, like, a Hong Kong action film in a video game environment, I guess you could say.
Totally. Especially the attention to detail and just even in-game references to other movies like Once Upon a Time in China and Hard Boiled.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
There's there's a Chinese cafe shootout. You're like, come on. you know what you're referencing.
I think you could even unlock. Yeah, you could unlock a Fist of Legend costume and Once Upon a Time in China.
There you go.
Costume.
This one is
totally. I mean, it hadn't been too long, but it's been a few years. But you know, I hang on to those games, so I still throw them on and play them once in a while.
Yeah,
Jackie totally. Chan Stuntmaster was another one that
exactly, dude. Oh my god!
I mean, that one's just a lot of fun. Like, I think it kind of flew under the radar a little bit, but.
My uncle was a big fan of it. I promise you, we will totally talk about those Hong Kong inspired video games. But
that would make for a good podcast.
Yeah, we've been overdue. We've been meaning to talk about other awesome comics, comic books, and even just novels themselves that are based on popular TV shows and movies that continued the beloved character's journey. I mean, There's all kinds of stuff out there, whether it's RoboCop or Indiana Jones. And speaking of hard boiled, I mean, there was a Inspector Tequila video game.
Oh yeah, Stranglehold. Yeah.
So this is a wild one, kind of like Undisputed was kind of owned by Millennium Films, but had different distributors like Dimension Films, Universal, and Warner Brothers. This is another one where, despite franchise being the main money man, this is produced by Snipes' Eamon Roth Films, Morgan Creek Productions, which had done some of his other kind of earlier blockbusters, and then Warner Brothers distributes as part of their franchise picture deals. And then the sequel, where Snipes returns, is a Sony joint. And then the third one is also a Sony joint, but instead they decide, we don't want to bring Snipes back. Let's bring Treach, that's right, from Naughty by Nature, back into the title role. And it's weird, too, because he does some other direct-to-video action films that feel very much kind of like this, or Mission Impossible, to where you're just like, I would like to just be in the executive's room and say, how did you make all these bizarre B-action movies? And what was the game plan?
Yeah, you know, Treach, he made like a few kind of, you know, I guess you, like you said, direct to video action movies, which gosh, I don't even know if I saw any of them. I remember he did one with Steven Seagal. I almost bought that one, but I never did yet, but one of these days I'll have to check it out. And then he did, what's that one called? Like a
Connor's War or
something?
Yeah, Love and a Bullet. And then, but this other spy one he did was called Connor's War. And I kept seeing that be advertised in all like the pay-per-view back in the day, back when pretty much anyone would buy anything. They didn't care if it went to a theater or not. yeah, it's insane. But we'll get to those as this goes down. But as everyone can probably see, this is kind of a decent A-list cast with a B-movie scenario, and then followed by kind of lowbrow, you know, not really remarkable sequels. But where would you rank this as a Snipes movie? Is this just kind of fun, like just more like seconds or thirds versus a underrated movie?
Well, you know, it's definitely not thirds.
Okay.
For me, at least. I mean, everybody's going to kind of have their own experience and stuff. I mean, it was one of only a few of his that I got to see in the theater. I saw Blade in the theater, mm-hmm. the first one.
Oh, sweet.
And then The Art of War.
Mm-hmm.
And then I don't think it's any more until Expendables 3. So I think only three I got to check out in the theater. And then, you know, it's one of those movies that, you know, it's just kind of, like I said, I bought it when it came out on VHS and kind of, you know, I'd definitely watch it periodically. And
mm-hmm.
it's hard to say exactly where I would put it. I mean, it's not really like a first wave, so to speak.
Yeah.
But.
Probably, but you wouldn't put it as his worst or anything. And
oh,
that's okay.
No way. No. It's like, it's one of my, you know, it's closer to my favorites than not. So.
Yeah. It's one of those where kind of like, it reminds me of that other Schwarzenegger movie, Eraser, and kind of any other movie that was trying to be like Enemy of the State. It was just kind of in that vein where people would, again, always compare your movie to like all the other Hong Kong stuff and say, oh, it's not as good as this or that. And it's like, well, it doesn't have to be.
Eraser was good. I mean, that was.
Oh, yeah.
That was good, it. Arnold. I mean, especially with those rail guns and everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, what else can you ask for? But yeah, this is kind of another one where I just kept seeing people say, oh, it's poor man's James Bond. I'm like, well, it's not trying to be like James Bond. It's kind of just tipping its hat. It's, I mean,
yeah,
you could say the same thing about Vin Diesel when he did XXX or any other actor who had their own spy movie franchise. You know, it's just trying to be its own thing while acknowledge inevitably that, hey, we're pretty inspired by all these other movies and shows.
Yeah. I mean, it's impossible not to not to be inspired.
You're gonna borrow. So, you're gonna.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I don't have any real complaints other than that. The traitor, you kind of know just from, we've just seen too many movies, so we know instantly Michael Biehn's up to no good.
Yeah.
But I think that was more just he was typecast. So if I had any complaint, don't get me wrong, he's having a lot of fun as the villain. But if I had to change it up, I would have probably just said, hey, maybe they could have just had there be three other people on the spy force, so we at least had more to pick from.
Yeah, yeah, that's a good point.
Kind of like if you're going to make it a complex chess game.
Like original Mission Impossible, where it was
exactly
Jim Phelps, you know.
Exactly. Yeah. That was a twist in and of itself. It's like the main mentor is the main villain.
Yeah. And he was like the hero of the TV series, right? So,
right. And
I mean,
people who were urchins who couldn't put aside their love of the show were like, nope, I refuse to acknowledge that. And other people were like, I don't know, man, that's pretty twisted. Yeah, I mean, so Neil Shaw, Snipes does get to do some good fight choreography here, and I still can't believe that this was, again, a few years before Born Identity, because same kind of deal where heavy attention to like how he breathes, how he even just crawls up a wall. It's a very visual themed movie. It's not just focusing on getting into the next fight scene, but like there's a bunch of just like stealth, and
yeah,
it seems like that just wasn't enough for audiences. It didn't make enough money back, but that's where I'm also like, I don't know what they wanted.
Then he had like a parachute or something right at the beginning scene where he like, I think he jumped off the building with a parachute, right?
Something, yeah,
like that.
Yeah, that's a good call. I totally forgot. Yeah, he takes it out of his shoe. Speeds away. If anything, I feel like some of the explosions go on a little too long, like everything explodes on impact. But let's be honest, that's just a trope of the times, back when they thought, you know, if you shoot a gun in a plane, that the entire side half of it just demolishes. And you kind of got to just, in action movie terms, just go with it.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Kind of like
part of the fun.
But that, I never understood why people have such an issue with him or Liam Neeson, and yet they're okay with Harrison Ford jumping off a cliff in The Fugitive, or, you know, anybody else can do that. I'm like, well, why are they exceptions? Oh, they're getting older. I'm like, well, that's kind of part of the formula. I don't get it. Oh.
How about you? I mean, where amongst like his other, you know, at least like starring roles in action films and stuff. I mean,
I wouldn't put it as his top 10, but it would probably be in a top 20 list for sure. Like, it's going to be up there somewhere, just as a fun, just Sunday night movie. I wouldn't put it as a 2 a.m. movie, but definitely just a reasonable, just, it reminds me a lot of Entrapment. Like, that's not going to be number one on my totem pole of Sean Connery or Catherine Zeta movies, but it's going to be up there somewhere after I'm done rewatching James Bond and Ocean's 11 franchise. It's going to be in there somewhere.
I finally got around to seeing that one just a couple years back. I mean, it was a twisted movie. It was okay. I mean, it wasn't that great. I mean, let's be honest. I mean, I think, you know, the whole, and I think, wasn't that scene, I know for sure, like, you know, like on the poster and stuff, like Catherine Zeta-Jones and everything,
mm-hmm,
in that like brown cat suit or whatever it was. It was like,
yeah,
oh, that's a strong selling point. And if I'm remembering correctly, like, she didn't even wear it in the movie, you know, like,
yeah.
But there was like the scene where she's like, you know, practicing, like going under the lasers and all that. I mean,
no, that's a good point. It was definitely at that time where kind of, it's still kind of in 60s, 70s mode where the actors are carrying the movie versus the premise standing out. And that's kind of where I took it as, is like, yeah, it's just a fun, not deep movie, not Not a top 10 movie. Not
very demanding. No, I mean, it was an okay movie.
Yeah, totally. It seems like we were at that point where we had to remind people, you know, you can have your mediocre, you know, one or two star movies, and then you can have your great 4 or 5 star movies, but you can still have your in-betweeners, the 3 out of 5s, the ones that you're like, yeah, that was fun.
Yeah. And
it didn't blow the roof off the house, but it did its job.
Kind of like Street Night with
there Justin. You go. Wincott, you know, yeah.
Perfect Weapon was up there, you know. I mean,
the BC lister, you know,
but Street Night was kind of like, all right, you know, it was a cool premise.
Totally.
You know, it's worth watching every once in a while, but it's not like, I mean, I used to watch The Perfect Weapon all the time, so it's not one of those movies where you just like watch it.
Right. It was
innumerable amount of times, but
the 90s were complex, dude. Like, this was kind of when people would do the whole HBO world premiere, or, oh yeah, I saw that, it was on Showtime all the time, or USA Network. And we were kind of, this is before Tubi and Pluto took over, where we reminded everyone, hey, you know, there's all kinds of just bizarre but fun cult movies you can watch.
I remember buying The Perfect Weapon. I think it was when Hollywood Video, back in, you know, 20 years ago, they were about, well, they were, I don't think they were going out of business yet, but they were like selling off all their VHS tapes because,
oh, man.
They, you know, this is an old format, we need to make way for more DVDs, whatever they were doing.
And that's before Blockbuster was going out of town. And I guarantee you, there was probably a bunch of direct-to-video Sony movies with Van Damme and Snipes on there, where you're like, I guess I'll buy that now.
I think I bought The Perfect Weapon VHS from them, you know, for a couple bucks. And I thought, like, for years, I thought, like, hey, I've got this great item here. Because I used to think, like, oh, it'll probably never come out on DVD, or let alone, I think Blu-ray wasn't even a thing yet at the time.
We didn't know what they would do down the road.
But now I got it on Blu-ray, and that tape is long gone.
Yeah. We were all kind of in denial of ourselves. I mean, we did it with Betamax, we did it with even DVD. You know, I still don't see anything wrong with today's DVD, but at the same time, I mean,
right,
you do it even now, where you're like, do I want the Blu-ray, or do I want to just buy the movie or TV show digitally? What do I want to do today? Or do I want to just, whatever streaming service has it, or cable TV, if I haven't cut the cord, plays it on the regular basis. It's however you want to save money. And
to me, it's like, it really depends. You know, if it's a film I'm really want to see, or if it's like my kind of film that I want to watch, usually I'm going to be buying it on Blu-ray, but
the best resolution.
But you know, if it's just something like, hey, I would rent this. Okay, well, let's check it out.
There's mixed reviews. Not sure if I want to waste time on it. Okay, then I'll.
But the whole 4K thing, I mean, I've just been very hesitant to dip into that, because
I have been too, because sometimes the quality is questionable. Like, you're seeing details you shouldn't even be seeing, like someone's nose hair or underwear.
Some of the colors, like the way they're, I guess the colors are like more saturated on Blu-ray sometimes.
I don't understand that either. Yeah.
I don't understand that. Some of the colors just look a little bit odd, even though it's supposed to be more realistic or natural. And it's just like
they did too good a job.
Enough's enough, personally, because, you know, I can't rebuild my entire collection now on 4K.
Like, yeah.
I got to kind of just limit myself to, like, all right, Blu-ray is good enough, you know, like.
Yeah.
I can still watch movies on VHS or VCD. I think Blu-ray is where I got to finally just kind of say, all right, this is kind of.
Yeah, just the first run, I'll go with it. I don't need the 4K, and pretty soon there might be an 8K, and it's like, oh, Lord, yeah, I don't need that.
Mean, don't get me wrong. If there's a film that I want to see, and we reach a day where they do away with Blu-ray, and it's only on 4K, then I'm going to have to do it. But, you know, otherwise, I feel like, I think I'm just going to, you know, save a little money and not open up the can of worms.
Right.
Like getting into it and then feeling like, now I got to replace every last movie or something. So,
Yeah, it's like everyone wants to replace stuff, and it's like, well, you know, it, you don't have to treat it like your car. Like, I'm just not filling it anymore. It doesn't have to be a divorce.
Right. No, but I mean, to everybody, I mean, I know people were psyched. I thought about buying it, but I just finally decided, you know what? I mean, I gotta just. I was happy with the last Blu-rays that came out of Bruce Lee's films, but I was still pretty intrigued to find out that they found this missing Big Boss footage after all these years.
Yeah.
Not years, but decades, right?
Who misplaced the tape?
Well, supposedly this stuff was just sitting around at,
man.
I guess it was at Fortune Star, not Golden Harvest, but supposedly nobody had ever asked for it. And they, and this Arrow company asked for it. And they said, oh yeah, we've got it.
So they did that whole
4K Bruce Lee set. But, you know, I was thinking, I thought about jumping the gun, you know, getting it. But then I was just like, you know, I'm real happy for everybody out there. I know a lot of people couldn't wait to get that. But I said to myself, you know what? I'm just going to stick with the Blu-rays here. Right. I did buy the Shout select ones that were like,
mm-hmm.
at least taken from a 4K print, color corrected. They look way better than the
previous
Shout Blu-rays. So I said, you know what? This is good enough.
That's the his greatest hits, pun intended one, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, there have been so many releases. And I bought his movies more than any movie. Replaced them, you know, this VHS copy, this DVD copy, another DVD copy, a third DVD copy, Blu-ray copy number 1, 2, 3. Okay, it's like finally, it's like, geez, you know.
Right. I love the movie, but I don't love it that much.
I started just kind of like, because I got so many movies, it's like, I was like running out of space, basically, especially once we had a baby.
And, yeah.
You know, like, I used to have a movie room up there. Now I have to condense everything in the basement. And so much of my shelf space was taken up with, like, multiple copies of the same movie that I don't even, you know, like, I upgraded it, so I'm not even going to watch that copy anymore. So instead of hanging on to it, I finally decided to just, you know, either give them away or sell them for a few bucks or mm-hmm. whatever.
eBay's been a real help at finding discounts, but there are times where sellers will make a deal with me. I'm like, that's not a $40 item.
Yeah.
And then there's other times where they're offering even more. I'm like, okay, well, I will do 40 for this one. It's a big, giant, exclusive set with a poster, but any higher, and I don't want to break my account.
Speaking of Bruce Lee and Wesley Snipes, there was some show at which I think we probably brought this one up before, but he yeah. like hosted some show back in
Masters of the Martial Arts. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
98 special. It's so much fun. There's a mixture of stand up there. It's kind of like the Tourist World Stunt Awards in a way, where they're honoring all these different acrobats and ultimate fighters,
which is a great thing to do. I mean,
totally. And there was,
one of these days, the Academy Awards needs to get with the program, you know.
Mm-hmm. I hope so, man. I think everyone's getting sick right now, so they're really hoping for some kind of extra inclusion, you know, because it's so wild how like the last stunt awards they gave out were like for, I think, Ben-Hur. So it's like,
Golden Globes,
and Emmys will do it, but that's for TV, you know. So it's like, what do we do for movies?
I follow, you know, obviously Hong Kong Film Awards giving out their best action choreography every year. And
that's
also
good.
Like you said, the Taurus World Stunt Award.
Yeah.
It's fun reading their website and really like reading like breakdowns of the scenes and the stunts and everything.
Yeah. They think very carefully how people are pitching it to them is like, what are we going to honor? What are we going to give a tribute to?
Mission Impossible 2 was the first winner of like the overall best stunt coordination on a feature film.
That's good.
I
didn't know that, but that's good.
You know, for anybody out there who just hears the bad things about Mission Impossible 2, hey, I mean, and I get it. Everybody's got different tastes. Some people might not like John Woo's style, but
yeah. Every action movie should be seen at least once, even if
enough people love his style. Where, you know, I definitely stand by that. The part two had the best action scenes. So,
mm-hmm. Well, and like you say, I mean, it doesn't. You're not going to get A plus, you know, acting and story and all these movies, but you should see them at least once for the experience and pyrotechnics.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, as a kid, like as an adult, I can go back and appreciate the first film a lot more. As a kid, to be honest, even though I was excited for it, I wanted to see it. I was like into like GoldenEye, the game, and had seen the movie and stuff. And
oh, man. Good stuff.
And so I thought like Mission Impossible would be a lot like that,
mm-hmm.
but it was like a lot different. And you know, the first time very I watched different. It as a kid, I was kind of disappointed. I thought, well, you know, this isn't really like a spy action.
Yeah,
there's some action in it, but it's you know, it's a little bit different. But then you know, the video the Mission Impossible video game came out too, and that one was like really good. I think that one's highly underrated.
Oh, which one, though? For the first movie or for the...
It was on Nintendo 64. Yeah, it was based on the first movie.
Yeah.
And then they...
Which says a lot.
MI2 came out, and it was just like... Once you got hit with those John Woo action scenes, it was like... All of a sudden, now it's like, boom. Like, now it's this action franchise.
Oh, totally.
And then when I go back and watch part one as an adult... It's like, all right, hold on a minute. Like, that's a cool film.
Yeah, it was another one. Like, there wasn't action in every segment. It was also a mystery movie. But yeah. That's a good point on the video game with both that and GoldenEye. People would realize, hey, the video game can be just as cool as the movie. And instead of just we're recreating a few missions and nothing really to it. And in a way, it was just like it was pretty much the same. The 90s, they somehow got it. It had to be kind of like an 80s TV show where the cartoon is, you know, of He-Man or Transformers is there to sell the toy and still be entertaining. But yeah, kudos to the ones who worked on the Mission Impossible games, considering that the movie itself wasn't even made yet and was going through like multiple rewrites, you know?
Oh, yeah, yeah. And the game, too. I mean, I was like reading up on it recently.
I would have been like, how do you make a coherent plot for a script that's not done yet?
Both GoldenEye and Mission Impossible had, you know, they had lots of missions based on the films, but they also had some levels and missions that were like exclusive to the game.
So exclusive. And, and for bringing this back here, I do feel like Art of War is pretty well liked by half the Wesley Snipes fan base, but Wesley Snipes, believe it or not, did a video game.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, don't get me wrong. There were video games that were made of Blade and everything, but he didn't have anything to do with that. But like in 2011, there was this thing called Julius Styles, the International. And just looking at it, it totally looked like that in the cover for Game of Death looked like they were kind of a tribute to the Art of War. But I mean, when he started doing those movies that were cheaply made in Romania that he had no idea were going direct to video, but are kind of liked by his fans.
Detonator.
Exactly.
The Detonator, right?
The Detonator totally looked like Art of War 2 or 3. Like, and he did a few other ones that were spy movies too. And he's like, yeah, he's kind of unofficially in that mode when he's not doing a gangster movie or slaying vampires.
Yeah. I mean, do you have like a favorite of all of his like action films? Like, is it Past Me 57, Blade?
I'm definitely going to put, you know, I kind of really love Drop Zone a lot.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
A lot of people don't seem to like it, but I love it.
That's kind of a fun movie.
I did too. It's his Point Break.
It didn't really wow me the first time I watched it, but
yeah.
You know, I bought it on Blu-ray, you know, 5-6 years ago, and I enjoyed it. I think Hans Zimmer did the music, I think.
I believe so. Yeah. And it was just one of those, it took a while for everyone to kind of have fun with it, but it was kind of, I guess you could say the market that and Money Train kind of felt along with Art of War kind of were kind of on the wayside. Cause like he was doing so many movies and so many cameos and ensemble stuff and comedies that I don't know. It was just kind of hard to keep up.
I think he was either a producer or an executive producer on The Big Hit. You remember that film?
Yes, yes. The Tarantino like assassin movie with Marky Mark and Lou Diamond Phillips. Yeah.
Yeah. John Woo was another producer on it. Mm-hmm. And that's actually an odd film, not to get off topic, but you know, that was like during the slew of, Hong Kong directors coming and doing American films. And
right.
Kurt Wong was the director, which
Kurt Wong and Cy Hart did that with Van Damme.
His style was so different from that movie. You know, he had been doing like these gritty urban crime movies, like Crime Story with Jackie Chan.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, a lot of like real like street level
stuff that's
stuff.
More like early John Woo and even kind of like.
Kind of like Ringo Lum, or
I was just about to say Ringo, yeah, and
like like just kind of like gritty and like I don't know, he just had a cool style to his work.
Yeah, no, Johnny Toe, yeah, Andrew Lau and Cy Hart, that just all those other guys who weren't Woo but were kind of like early John Woo and City on Fire type stuff, where it's like we're gonna show you a hard boiled just mixture of action, mystery, and noir. And
yeah, you know, looking back, I think Wesley Snipes should have done a movie, like a big budget mainstream theatrical release with one of those Hong Kong directors, you know.
I would have loved to have seen that. Something kind of like Maximum Risk with Van Damme would have been fun. Just
yeah, double team, you know. I mean,
well, less like double team, but yeah.
I love that movie. It's cheesy, no doubt about it. But, you know,
I get it.
Like, if you know, like, Choi Hawk's style, like, his, like...
Oh, really, I love...
Like, inventive, like, camera work and everything. Like, oh, even Knockoff.
Yeah, no.
When I saw Knockoff in the theater, I thought it was a piece of crap.
Oh,
but,
yeah.
But I didn't know his style. I didn't know who Choi Hawk was at the time. Going back, it's like, man, there's so much cool shit in his camera work and everything.
Yeah, I don't care for the movie, but I do like all his other crime movies, like Time and Tide. And
yeah, even Time and Tide was like, I think that's like his best modern day action work. I mean, that movie was really good.
Even A Better Tomorrow Free, I think, has, it's often lampooned, but he loves doing kind of just subtle revenge movies instead of in your face kind of. He, Ringo, and Johnny Toe all kind of do the whole just pot boiler. You know, disgruntled cop, bank robber with an unusual agenda, and then wham, 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 five different plot twists. Like,
you know, all three of them collaborated on a film. You probably saw it, maybe Triangle with.
Yes, I think so.
Simon Yum and Louis Koo, and a lot of people are in it. But it was like, you know, the film itself, if you didn't know their styles, it's not like it was broken up into like three stories or three segments. It was just like, okay. You know, Choi Hawk's going to direct the first third. Ringo is going to take over. Johnny Toe's going to finish it.
Yes.
But if you know their styles, you can kind of see it, especially totally Johnny Toe. Like there was no mistaking, like, okay, he did the end, you know.
Right. Who are you kidding? He totally, yeah. With the iris fade out. Yeah, it's got to be him.
the certain stylistic shootout and everything. And just like the dark humor and, you know, like all kinds of stuff, just the camera work too, you know, but.
Oh, totally. And I look at it even with Vengeance 2009, like they love showing just unusual characters who we shouldn't have any connection to and somehow humanizing them in some capacity, whether it's a, you know, retired hitman or a cop who's on his last day of retirement. And then some that they even just the peaceful warrior who like owns a dojo, you know, just, and
no, like, cause I was going to say, you know, pretty much a lesser known director out of Hong Kong. His name is, Leong Po Chi.
I love him too. Oh my God.
Well, but, and he didn't really do that much stuff, but he actually directed The Detonator with Snipes.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And he directed a Steven Seagal, direct a video movie called, I think it was called Out of Reach.
Yeah. Yeah. He's done so many unusual, like adventure, mystery, even horror movies, even some TV movies. And, but yeah, just seeing him work all throughout like the Philippines and Britain. And then, like you say, doing these more, all the, every other Sony action movie, you know, it's just like with these has-beens was just, it was just kind of fun because you just got to, he does have a very vibrant, visual style.
I never saw too many of his films. I mean, the old one he did with Chow Yun-fat is called Hong Kong 1941, and it was kind of like, it came out like before Better Tomorrow and everything. Chow Yun-fat wasn't even like an action star yet, so it was more of like a drama and stuff.
I always meant to see it. I've seen 1911 with Jackie Chan, but that's a different story. But yeah,
that one didn't turn out very well.
No.
It would have been good to see Jackie and Wesley Snipes together.
Oh yeah,
in a film.
It came pretty close. I think they both auditioned for, like, or no, it was Jet Li and him who auditioned for Ballistic X vs. Sever, and that didn't take off. But
oh really? Okay.
I had the opportunity to talk to the director who explained, you know,
oh, sweet,
how he got fired from the movie by Andrew Stevens, and he had to live with the fact that, hey, I'm arrogant, but I still have much to learn. And, you know, the studios, you pretty much, they're always going to mess with your various projects. So you got to pretty much find a way to just kind of like how Conan O'Brien would get away with doing some edgy comedy skets, is like, you got to fool the producers into making them think that your idea is their idea, so they'll leave you alone. And that just didn't work out, but it, yeah, no, that's a good point. And how would you say Christian Duguay handles action here? I mean, he's had no shortage of a lot of mystery in action movies made for TV or in theaters. He did Live Wire with Pierce Brosnan.
Okay.
Another obscure movie.
I don't think I saw that one.
It was more of a just Mad Bomber kind of movie, and it got more popular like on cable TV like after the fact when he became Bond. Yeah.
I remember seeing like the preview some years back, just like watching it on YouTube and stuff, and I like thought about picking it up. Maybe I'll have to do that, because I don't know if I've seen any of his other movies, but I do remember like there was like the Detonator movies with Pierce Brosnan from the 90s that were
USA Network, like TV movies,
direct to video type things. But I think, you know, I thought he handled the action pretty well.
I think it helps that he was basically mentored by, long story short, David Cronenberg, and he took over the Scanners franchise. Then he did Screamers with Peter Weller. And then from that point on, he just decided, he was kind of, he worked with Donald Sutherland on a TV miniseries that was really good called Human Trafficking, where he played a federal agent kind of taking down some, you know, black market guys, you know, stopping them from doing all those illegal exploitation activities. It seems like he's kind of still in this mode. He just knows how to create tension and just leave it to the stunt coordinators and demolition guys to come up with the explosions he can frame.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there wasn't anything that was like just amazing or outstanding in the movie, but everything was done in above average, very solid,
mm-hmm.
you know, kind of fashion. It had a sleek look to it.
Don't they? And I guess with the sequels, part two had like maybe two decent fights. It kind of suffered from like too much editing and just very obnoxious dialogue that, like, just as they're about to fight, some villain has to get in like a generic, "I thought I killed you" line. And you're like, Lord, is this a 70s cartoon show? You know, jinkies. And part three, it's so weird. It kind of is back to the same deal, where it's like there's some Chinese agents and South Korean agents trying to start World War III. But it's kind of, it feels like one of those Fred Olen Ray, Jim Wynorski type of schlock fest, you know what I mean? Where there's stock footage.
Played Neil Shaw, the character, right?
Right. Yep, yep. Okay. And
yeah, because I never got around to watching either sequel, but
yeah, I don't think anyone needs to see either. Art of War 2 often came packaged with part 1 in certain DVD Blu-ray packs. Part 3 came on Bounce cable TV channel quite a lot. And so that's
usually
where
I get a little bit wary of a direct-to-video sequel to a theatrical release. I mean,
no, I can't blame you.
Not to say that they can't be good, but
right, no, I mean,
something I rush out to see all the time.
We'll return after these messages.
The Jacked Up Review Show podcast is honored to be part of the Blind Knowledge Podcast Network. Join anytime, talk the talk, and enjoy yourselves. There's something enlightening for everyone with this crowd of cool cats. Check them out.
Hey, it's Brent Pope, the host of Breakfast with Brent Pope. You've seen me on some of your favorite TV shows saying things like, "Give it up, Jimmy. You got to sink this putt to win." On Breakfast with Brent Pope, I sit down with guests from the entertainment world and we do it all over breakfast. Or should I say Breakfast? Every week on Breakfast, you get inside Hollywood info and tips, great breakfast wrecks and booty debates. Most of all, you get the most delightful 30 minutes of your week. So dig in. It's Breakfast time. Listen at Breakfast.com, Apple Podcasts, or wherever fine podcasts are found.
Do you ever find yourself thinking about who would win in a fight between Goku and Superman? Hi, I'm James Gavsy, and on the Who Would Win show, me and my co-host Ray ignore anything important happening in the outside world and debate fictional battles between characters from comics, movies, and video games.
We got a new show every week, and almost always am I the winner.
Yeah, not true, Ray.
In the past, we've discussed such matches as Captain America versus Darth Vader, Solid Snake versus the Iron Giant, classic matchups like RoboCop versus Terminator, and even the Muppets versus Sesame Street.
That one was crazy. So if you're a fan of geek culture and love a spirited debate, check out the Who Would Win show wherever you get your podcasts, or check us out at whowouldwinshow.com.
Oh, totally. With part two, I mean, at least Snipes came back, you know, and it had a decent, almost Tony Scott kind of visual look. But then, yeah, part three, I was just kind of like, yeah, this is kind of more of a, you know, 2 a.m. It looks like a cheesy sci-fi channel Skinamax kind of movie. It's not really.
What did you think of Boiling Point? Did you see that one?
Oh, I love that one.
Really?
It's not really liked a lot, but it's kind of fun.
Yeah, I mean, I'd seen it a long time ago, you know, back in the day when I would rent, you know, as many of those kinds of movies as I, you know, have time for. But
very young Viggo Mortensen. Yeah.
I watched it again, you know, within the last few years, and I was just kind of like bored with it. I was like, nah, this movie wasn't,
I mean, very good. It is a very slow 90s movie, and it's pretty much, if you take away the big giant cast, it's kind of more of a Miami Vice episode. So
yeah, Dennis Hopper, right? And then
yeah.
You know, one of these days I'll probably throw it on again, give it another go. But
no, I can't blame you. I mean, some of these are going to be kind of goofy.
I'm trying to think. I mean, obviously, New Jack City is fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Even he had a smaller role in King of New York.
That's right. Yeah. Very true. Very
I still
true.
I feel like we're forgetting something, like, obviously the played movies, but geez, what else? You mentioned Rising Sun. I gotta watch that one again.
That's also kind of a noir movie mixed in with kind of buddy cop. But
oh,
you can
Sugar
make,
Hill.
Oh yeah, so underrated.
Another that gangster. One was okay. I didn't love it, but it was okay. It was definitely, you know,
it was. I mean, it's not a must see, but it's. I recall seeing that one on BET quite a lot, and just liking how it wasn't glamorizing that, you know, lifestyle.
Right. I mean, it's worthy. It's worthy to pick up or at least watch. I mean, it's not a classic or anything, but
mm-hmm.
New Jack City's a classic. It's not New Jack City, but it is. It's definitely worth watching.
Mm-hmm. Definitely around there, yeah. And without feeling like, hey, you know, they're talking about this and that, but you know, it seems like every other movie or show will often just want to ape the other, and I think that was kind of, it's interesting with New Jack City how Mario Van Peebles wasn't going for a Scarface look, but yet that's often what he got from people is, oh, it's a flashy Scarface type movie. So, I mean,
yeah.
And that one was kind of more, that was almost like The Wire or an episode of Homicide, just showing, you know, just a lesser lifestyle and how people get corrupted. But I like movies where the criminal is very self-aware of their profession. Like, it was almost kind of like Never Die Alone with DMX, where you're just seeing, hey, this guy knows what happened and is pretty much like, are you sure you want me to tell the story? Because you're going to hate me by the end of this. but yeah, with these Neil Shaw movies, you can watch part one and you can watch part two if it's a lazy Sunday, and part three is more of a bad movie night, despite being fans of Treach's music.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned Kiri Hiroyuki Tagawa. I mean, he's been, I know he's been doing quite well, it seems, in recent years. Like, he had that, I didn't watch it, but he had like that show, I think it was called
Oh, Man in the High Castle.
Yeah, that's, yeah. Man in the High Castle. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Obviously, he returned to Mortal Hawaii Kombat.
Oh, yeah.
Shang Tsung again in the game web series as well. So he's gotten to play the character three times now, which I think overall that's probably his most famous role. From the original Mortal Kombat film.
Absolutely. Yeah. It was cool seeing kind of that tribute while seeing the other actors, you know, like I thought Casper Van Dien did a cool take, his own cool take on Johnny Cage, as opposed to trying to ape Lyndon Ashby.
Yeah. No, Casper was good. I wish they had released the third season of that web series.
Yes. Oh, Garrett.
They did like that interview with Garrett Warren.
Yeah. On Realmcast. It was so good. And, you know what? Michael J. White got to be part of that, but I would have loved to have seen Wesley Snipes part of the Mortal Kombat franchise too, I think.
Yeah, you know, I never even really
I don't know who he'd play, but it'd be cool if he played just someone who, even if they just created him for the movie, just like as he could be kind of a just someone who just threatens Raiden or Sub-Zero, maybe.
Oh, another one of his movies. Well, I mean, he's only in it not a whole lot, but it's a more recent film, Cutthroat City. I don't know if you saw that one.
Yeah, it's still on the watch list. What do you think of it? Was it like Brooklyn's Finest?
You know, I was hoping it was going to be an epic, kind of like, yeah, I mean, Brooklyn's Finest was great. I mean, mm-hmm. Antoine Fuqua, I mean, that's his specialty.
He's the Walter Hill of our generation.
You know, he's great at doing those films, Training Day. I mean,
hard-boiled like movies. Yeah.
Replacement Killers was freaking a very fun movie, you know.
Totally.
Even though, you know, people, I think a lot of people, I gather a lot of people who are already fans of Chow Yun-Fat probably were disappointed with it, because he didn't really get a whole lot of, you know, acting to work with in that film. But I think he made up for it with like The Corruptor.
I'd say so, yeah. It was very eye-opening.
Yeah, for me, it was like, because I had never heard of Chow Yun-Fat when that movie came out. I mean, I was only like 12.
Right. So,
but I learned right away, like, okay, he was another big star in Hong Kong, you know, and I had only recently in the last few years been getting into, you know, Bruce Lee, Jackie Chan,
mm-hmm.
you know, their movies. So then all of a sudden, okay, hey, now here's this other guy. All right, let's see what else he's done. And I had heard of John Woo. Oh, sweet. They did this movie Hard Boiled together. You know, let's rent that. And then, you know, it's like mind blowing the first time you watch it. So
I definitely thought so, too. Yeah, it was a fun mixture of all kinds of movies.
But I mean, back to Cutthroat City. I think RZA has a lot of potential as a filmmaker.
But yeah, I'd say
I don't know. I felt that film, it had a great cast.
Mm-hmm.
Demetrius Shipp Jr., who played Tupac in the All Eyes on
Me. Oh, that's right. Imagine if Tupac and Wesley had done a movie together.
Oh, that would have been really cool.
That's dream cast right there.
Who else? Ethan Hawke was in it,
right?
I believe.
And that's why I thought it was going to be like Brooklyn's Finest, because they're doing movies together.
Issa Gonzalez, I mean, she really played the kind of a different type of you know, they made her more like frumpy and stuff in that movie mm-hmm. than she normally, she's, you know, not looking like that, but
right.
I don't know. I just, the ending was like really weird too. It was like,
it was kind of over advertised, but you didn't really know what to feel in a way.
Well, the ending, it was kind of hard to figure out exactly what was going on, from what I remember. I only watched it once. I just remember, I don't want to spoil it in case.
I wanted to watch it, but it just kept getting taken off every other streaming service I was on. So I was like, what's going on?
Yeah. I mean, I thought it was going to be like, I thought it was going to be better than it was, but it's still worth watching for sure. You know, Wesley Snipes' part in the movie was pretty small, but I think he was in at least...
It's better than some of his latest movies, which have been kind of...
Three scenes, yeah.
He did a few other one where he was like trying to deactivate some robots, and it just kind of was too slow for my taste.
Did you see the Game of Death one that he did or not?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. That was like...
How was that? Because I never saw that one.
You know, despite people not caring for some of the other movies that... that filmmakers worked on with Dolph Lundgren, I felt like this one was at least, it gave a fun role, villain roles for Zoe Bell and Gary Daniels, but altogether it was kind of a tribute to Snipes's earlier work. Like, he does kind of play another just guy with a special set of skills, kind of like Art of War, but then he finds himself in similar kind of situations, kind of like you would see in Money Train or Passenger 57. So it's kind of just a love letter to his earlier work, while also being...
Who directed it?
Giorgio Serafini. He's this other European filmmaker who's, you know, done some Like It or Hate It movies with Randy Couture and Dolph Lundgren. And I'd say this is probably a better one he did, where everyone had pretty much just was another just get in, get out, just fun slugfest movie. Like, it could have worked for even Stone Cold or Michael J. White. Like, it's just, even Roddy Piper. It is a very straightforward action movie that knows what it is, instead of, like you say, being over-edited or not making use of talent.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, it's hard for me to get over the title, like, because my mind goes right to Bruce Lee's movie.
No relation to Bruce.
Right, right. Nothing to do with that one, obviously. But no, one of these days I may have to check it out.
Yeah, it should be on just about every other streaming platform.
let's see. What else? You mentioned Brooklyn's Finest. That was a good role for him. I liked his role in that film.
Such a tragic movie, even kind of, once again, kind of the, it's not the same kind of role that you already saw him in New Jack City or Sugar Hill. It's kind of just good rapport with Don Cheadle, and who's in a similar role, much like in, you know, that's the kind of role I like seeing Don Cheadle in, and just like in, you know, Out of Sight or Colors, where he's like, see, he can really have so many different shades to.
Yeah, Out of Sight was great. I mean, that's what made me a fan of Don Cheadle back in the day.
Totally. There's all these actors who have been chameleons for years, and you kind of just wish someone could still throw them a bone. It was like, oh, but remember when they did this and that? Is there any just like premise that you're surprised Snipes hasn't done yet? Like, he's still got maybe a few extra kicks in him. I mean, I saw the Player TV show, which, and True Story, which was a Netflix miniseries he did, and same kind of deal where I was like, see, he can still kick a guy and have an over the top persona and play around with some psychological mind games with his characters. I'd love to see him at least do just one more cool slugfest before he hangs it up. Because he's done stuff with Eddie Murphy, but that's about it.
Yeah, I mean, there's no reason why he can't continue to make films for a little while. I mean, Arnold, Stallone, they're still doing it. I mean, yeah, they're older than him. And I mean, he did his Die Hard, you know, his Die Hard clone, or whatever you want to call them, like ripoff.
Yeah.
Die Hard scenario, I guess, is the best term.
Right. He's done every other Dog Day Afternoon type movie, and he's still got something left.
Let's see. I mean, one thing I'm wondering is, you know, why isn't he in Expendables 4, apparently?
I think everyone got so fed up, like, waiting on that to come around. I know Terry Crews had a falling out because the agent who, the talent agent who grabbed him at the award show happened to be the same guy who reps Adam Sandler and Stallone. So that got really ugly real fast. And then, I know Stallone was just getting sick of it because dealing with producer Avi Lerner. And that's when he decided, okay, you know, I'm going to do what I should have done, where this is now just an excuse for me to leave the franchise and Jason Statham is spearheaded now. The poster was announced at Cannes before it was even ready to be greenlit, and they put Statham and Banderas' name on it, even though Banderas wasn't confirmed. So, yeah.
Apparently Schwarzenegger is in it, though. I mean, from what I understand, he's in it. I heard that he filmed scenes for it.
Interesting.
And they're just trying to keep it a secret or something, like a surprise cameo or something. I obviously can't swear to that, but
that's what I saw on Movie Web that he wasn't returning, but who knows, they might have filmed something. I think he did a good job on FUBAR recently, where he's parodying his spy movie persona. But yeah, Arnold.
What did you think of the trailer, anyway, of Expendables 4?
Oh, I always go in cold. I haven't seen the trailer.
You didn't even. Okay, yeah, you're a lot like my friend Eugene. Yeah, I mean,
they always give it away, man. They always give away. But I like Scott Waugh and Rick Roman Waugh, those two stuntmen turned brothers. But I mean,
yeah, I want to check out the one that he did with Jackie Chan and John Cena, The Hidden Strike.
Oh, I haven't seen that.
It was like a movie that was delayed for a long time.
Because of his Project Extraction
or something or other. And then,
oh, wow.
Different titles. But apparently it may well be out on Netflix.
I see it now. Yeah.
I might be wrong about that, but
you're right.
It's on there.
Yeah. I see it on there. I'll have to check that one out. That looks like a crazy bananas movie.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I don't want to spoil anything. I mean, it's just a trailer, obviously.
Oh, good.
I want to see it. I mean, and it's just a trailer, so you know, maybe the movie will be better. But the trailer was like a little bit underwhelming, I would say. But
bummer.
But I mean,
that's why I often don't watch them, because like they'll. half the time they'll be just like deleted scenes, and so I'm like, okay, well,
yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, you never want to get too hung up, because sometimes you see things in the trailer, and then they're not in the film.
Yeah, it's insane.
But yeah, no, that's definitely one. I mean, I got to go see that one in the theater. I mean, I've seen them all in the theater, so.
I only saw the third one in theaters, but I'm definitely going to see, yeah, that one in theaters. I'm going to try and get as many of my friends there for it. And I'm with you. I do wish Snipes and Banderas could come back, but.
Yeah, even Jet Li. I mean, I think Jet Li was getting tired of it.
Oh, well, he has like arthritis, I think, now. And
yeah, thyroid issues and everything. So, but at least, you know, Tony Jaa's in it.
They could have gotten Donnie Yen, but they wouldn't. Yeah,
Donnie Yen would be great to see in one of those finally, or Jackie Chan.
He's another one who, as long as you film in Hong Kong and not in Hollywood, he'll be in your movie. And it seemed like each time they tried to get all the other guys, they weren't either willing to pay their typical salary, or they just couldn't agree on what their role even was. So it's a shame, because for a movie that's supposed to be a fun throwback to earlier action adventure cinema, it would have been fun, but we'll see.
And didn't Steven Seagal? Yeah. I think he was gonna be in it, but he had a disagreement with Lerner, right?
Yeah, he had pissed off Lerner so many times, and Stallone was like, "Hey, I've already seen him misbehave at one of my parties. I just want to get this damn thing done on time."
Well, yeah, you never know. I mean, maybe if. I kind of expect this will be the last one, but I guess you never know. Maybe he's, like you said, maybe it goes off in the Statham direction, where he's kind of the lead.
Christmas, an Expendables story. Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah, that was what they were going to call it, right? And then they were going with Expendables 4.
I had no idea. I was just making stuff.
Oh, well, no, seriously. Like, I remember there, you know, back in, you know, a couple years ago or something, there was some articles that said like that was going to be the title of the film or something. So.
Oh, jeez.
I guess you can start naming films.
Huh? Either way, Stallone's killing it on Tulsa King. And I hope all these guys can stay busy, because so many of our guys are either, you know, retired or don't want to do these kind of movies anymore.
No, I champion all of them. Keep going, you know, as long as they can make it. I like the tagline, even though it's cheesy, you know, they'll die when they're dead.
There you go. Yeah. Something over the top. That's just embracing.
But, you know, Snipes, I mean, come on. I mean, he can keep going, I think, for a while.
He should. I mean,
I think Sammo Hung, he's starting to show his age, unfortunately.
He's getting up there. Yeah.
He's in his 70s now, which, I mean, he's younger than Stallone and Arnold and them, but I think he's had more like health issues and like.
I think so. I don't think he's to dementia level yet. Anyone can correct me if I'm wrong, but yeah, he's definitely seen better days. I would like to see Simon Yam, but other than Tomb Raider 2, he hasn't really done any Hollywood appearances.
I think Sammo, he had like a knee surgery, something like that, back around the time of Ip Man 2, he had like a heart surgery even.
Oh, damn. That's a lot, man.
I know they just gave him like some kind of recognition at the, I believe it was the Asian Film Awards.
And that's sweet. That's
back
really
in
nice.
March. And he was like, I saw the video where he accepted the award. He was grateful that people still, you know,
acknowledge him.
Acknowledge his impact. Because
him
industry.
And Vinny the Jet are kind of forgotten, and it's like, why? They're legends in the action industry.
Yeah.
Even Chuck Jeffries, you know, he's done movies like for PM Entertainment, and he's the chariot guy in Gladiator, but I'll always remember him as designing the fight scenes in both Wesley Snipes' 90s movies, as well as the first Spider-Man, but yeah, all these coordinators, they should not be forgotten. They shouldn't be known by even just the filmmakers. And that's cool, though, to see Sammo still getting some love, because.
Yeah, keep going as long as you can. I mean, you know.
They could probably get Tony Leung, because he got a career boost from doing Shang-Chi. But And yeah, I was getting so annoyed because family members were like, oh, I've never heard of him before. I'm like, ugh, we have some homework
missing
to
out
do here.
For 20, 30 years.
Right. He's only been in every other movie with Andy Lau and Maggie Q and Chow-Yun Fat. But yeah, I mean, it'd be so funny had he been in Departed and played his same character as Infernal Affairs. That would have been meta.
Yeah, no, I think that was a good Hollywood debut for him, finally.
Finally.
more fanfare than, I guess you can count The Great Wall for Andy Lau as being kind of a...
That's so true, and I kept guffawing because basically Matt Damon had played in the Departed Andy Lau's traitor character, you know, which is a remake of Infernal Affairs, and so I thought it was so funny. Oh, two traitors in one movie together.
Yeah.
The Great Wall.
Yeah, I mean, The Great Wall wasn't all that great, but...
Yeah, it could have been better, but...
Shang-Chi was a lot of fun, though.
Oh, totally. Take away the bad humor of Ben Kingsley. There's some fun mayhem in that movie.
I mean, the action, too. I mean, especially in the first... Like, the fight on the bus, and then the fight...
Yeah.
Scaffolding and stuff.
That whole Doctor Strange part of that whole cinematic universe is... I mean... This is why I am wishing that with this new Blade movie that's been delayed and each director has quit so far, I was like, if anything, if they want to save this movie, make him be the son of Blade. Bring Wesley back into that cinematic universe.
Yeah, I mean, you've heard of Brad Allen?
Brad Allen.
He had been the fight stunt coordinator.
Oh, the martial artist.
But he passed away, unfortunately.
Oh, wow.
He was the non-Chinese member of Jackie Chan's stuntman.
Yeah, he worked on Hellboy 2 and Riddick. Oh, my God. Damn.
And he was in, I don't know if you saw the movie Gorgeous with Jackie Chan, but...
Yeah, he's the boxer. Yeah.
Yeah. He had, like, two great fights with Jackie in that film. I mean, that guy was just phenomenal.
I'm looking at it now. Man. And, every other British or Canadian production, Ninja Assassin... Wolves, Edgar Wright movies.
I believe he even did Kingsman, because I remember watching the first Kingsman in the theater, and I thought to myself, some of this action has like a Hong Kong flair to it, and then I see Brad Allen's name in the credits. I'm like, oh, well, there you go.
Man, so he got one World Stunt Award, three SAG Guild Awards.
Yeah, he passed away like right. I think it was like a month before the Shang-Chi movie came out or something. Dedicated it to him.
I can't find anything on what he died of. Did he?
I'm not sure exactly what happened. No, I don't know.
That is sad.
Yeah, it's very sad. I mean, I was shocked to hear it. I mean, I didn't.
48. Damn.
I didn't know him, obviously, personally. I never met him, but.
Like you say, you feel like you know him when you recognize his signature action style, and you're like, yeah, that. I'm staying till the end of the credits to see who the second unit stunt coordinator is.
Yeah, and there was a great interview up on YouTube with him from back in the day where he talked about, like, you know, how he got started working with Jackie Chan and got in.
That's nice.
Ended up being on the stunt team and everything.
Cool. Very nice. That's all, folks. I feel like we have pretty much given Snipes a lot of love. We're still talking about all the 70s to current day iterations of the action genre, and we know what we want to see. We know what we love seeing. We talked about some other underrated sleepers. Fan mail is always appreciated. Well, we promise to give you some more fun interviews soon, too.
Yeah, I'm glad that people are kind of starting to take it back to, like, the practical effects days a little bit more. You know, I mean, they're starting to realize, like, this just generally looks better.
Right.
Than CGI.
Totally. And... it's a shame, too, because I remember the days when CGI still looked legit good, like when we're talking T2 or the first Jurassic Park. And then,
oh, yeah.
Everyone who's been with it long enough has always said, like, every time, like, people would make suggestions, they'd always like cut it out or just say, oh, we're not doing that, or we'll worry about the script later. It's like, no, get these good effects. A plot.
I mean, CGI has its place, don't get me wrong. I mean, yeah, you know, but for like a, you know, traditional action, contemporary action film, I mean, I think it should be used sparingly these days. And some, I think a lot of times it gets just overused. Granted, I get to, like, for safety measures, I don't blame anybody for wanting to use it for safety measures, but
right, but it's just so sad when you see like some of these films and like the people storyboarding it didn't even know how they wanted to create it, where it's like, well, you've had you know, 5 months to figure out how you want to film this. Could have asked. Hopefully they hire people with more experience and less arrogance, you know, because you're just always so sad when you ask someone about one of their favorite movies of theirs, and they're like, oh, well, nothing personal, I don't want to talk about it, or it was good, but I didn't agree with how it was distributed or made, or it was just hell, I hated making it. And it's like, ah, oh, damn, sorry.
Well, yeah, definitely, man. It was a good chat.
Yeah, I mean, long overdue, man. Great catching up with you.
Yeah, it's always fun. We should, yeah, we got to start doing it again more regularly.
I promise. We mentioned so many good movies, and I do promise we're going to do more actor specials where it's like, here's five, you know, like, crime movies with this actor. Here's two action thrillers, you know, with this guy. Here's five by this particular filmmaker. Here's four horror giallo movies by this, you know, cult filmmaker. You know, just always something to just kind of just show. We're like the Mill Creek Blu-ray pack of the podcast.
Well, one of these days, we if you want to do it, we should just do a John Woo episode, because I mean, to me, totally. Like that's like so much to go off on, you know, like, like you could easily fill, you know, 2 hours worth of that.
2 hours, yeah.
And not even, and hardly scratch the surface. Whereas, you know, Art of War. I mean, I've seen it many times, but like
somehow
I don't know the film like, as well as like, you know, Hard Target or Hard Boiled or something like that.
Yeah, a different kind of movie.
All right, well, take care, man.
Anytime,
great talking with
dude.
You again. We'll
always
keep in
great
touch.
Having you on.
We'll,
anytime. You
we'll
know
find
it.
More topics.
Epicness. We're going to keep celebrating.
Absolutely, man. Always.
Follow us on the web on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. The podcast is available on Podbean, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Anchor, Apple, and anywhere else podcasts are available. Feel free to review our show and leave comments on any of those sites. Thanks a million for listening. It's a jacked up.